Listener-supported, non-commercial radio from the campus of Henry Ford College. This is WHFR Dearborn.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the WHFR Journal. My name is Alan Mazurek, along with Susan McGraw. It is so wonderful to be with you this Friday afternoon for an hour of events and things going on in our community. We made it through Election Day, and we'll talk about that a little bit later on in the program. We have new mayors in Dearborn, for sure, and obviously we have a mayor in Dearborn Heights. We're going to get to that a little bit later on in the program. But right now, we want to talk about some events going on here on the Henry Ford campus. And, of course, it's been... Well, we always said, I guess, Susan, you know, like last year was a year like no other. And this one is also a kind of a different type of year of no other, because there is a lot of activity going on campus, but there are also a lot of events that are taking place virtually. And, it's a great opportunity for students that, may not be on campus to connect and be a part of things that are going on and connect with students and parts of groups. That whole social aspect is one of the great things about being in a college environment, and it's just great to have these opportunities available. So we've got something really special coming up next week, and we kind of want to start off talking about that a little bit today, don't we?
Absolutely. Alan, thank you. You know, some organizations have had to scale back a bit these past year and a half, 2 years. Others have just kept pushing forward because there's this recognition that problems don't stop just because, you know, classes have to not be on campus anymore, and challenges don't end just because we're all sort of suffering through some other things differently. And one of those organizations is the Black Male and Queens Focus Group here at Henry Ford College. So we are very proud and excited to welcome the coordinators of that organization to our interview today, to our discussion. And we're going to be talking about a conference that I understand has been sort of a long time in the making, but an inaugural opportunity to spotlight, showcase, and discuss the essence of the Black woman. This is only the most appropriate and logical organization, Black Male and Queens Focus Group, to be presenting content like this. So we are so excited that this is actually happening, and we are very much looking forward to learning more about it and why you should participate in this event, in this two-day online virtual Zoom conference. And we could talk about it, but we brought the experts in. We brought the people that have really made this happen, not only this particular conference, but so much going on with this wonderful organization. So I am very pleased to welcome to our airwaves via the computer technology, both Chardon Claiborne, who is lead faculty at Henry Ford College and faculty director of the HFC Learning Lab, so you might know the name from there, but also coordinator of the Black Male and Queens Focus Group. In addition, Dr. Calvin Duran Harvell is joining us today, and he is, as you probably know if you've been around our campus at all, a dynamic professor of sociology and coordinator, Black Male and Queens Focus Group. Gentlemen, we are so pleased to have you here today representing something that is just so important, dynamic, and also timely. You know, timely is the key here, I think. So before we get into some of the specifics of the when and the where and the how, let's talk about the why. Let's just get into that as we kick things off. So welcome to both of you, and we'll let whichever of you wants to start talking about that. Why are we here? Why are we having this conference? Why are we excited to talk about this?
All right, wonderful. Thank you. I think you just pointed to me, brother, that I can go ahead and jump in first. Thank you so much, first of all, for having us here and having us to have this opportunity to build and connect with your listeners, connect with the community overall. Dr. Calvin Rohn Harvell, again, one of the coordinators of the Black Male and Queens Focus Group. The answer to the why, I think, is a part of that is implicit within our name. Black Male and Queens Focus Group. Queens means quintessential, unique, essence of ebony, necessary sisters. And that part of necessary, I think, becomes extremely important. Oftentimes, we have groups that focus on one person or one individual or one group within the community overall. We are saying that we have to move forward together, or there may not be any movement whatsoever. So again, Black male and queer, so our sisters are always a part of everything that we do. The why, I think, is several reasons, but I think I'll focus on just maybe two at this particular point in time. One of these why is the larger theme. When we talk about, for example, we have been always focused on the idea of Black History Month. And we understand, as the Black Male and Queens Focus Group, that when Dr. Carter G. Woodson put together Black History Month, he never intended Black History Month to be one month. He said that that month was supposed to be the time that you celebrate all of the sophisticated studying and learning that you had done for the rest of throughout the rest of the year. And so this is one of our ongoing projects in terms of making sure that we're putting this type of history at the forefront in everything that we do. And then, of course, it's the excellence of the Black Woman Conference. And this actually goes back to what Malcolm X said. He said the most hated, the most disrespected person in the so-called United States. He said America, but I'm going to say the so-called United States is the Black woman. And as the Black Male and Queens Focus Group, a part of what we're trying to do is we want to challenge those narratives, right? We want to dismantle any narrative that is detrimental to any of us. And so as a part of that dismantling of this particular narrative, we want to essentially make sure that we're working to put the Black woman at the forefront and to celebrate her, to give her her props right now. And Brother Claiborne, I'm going to steal one of your lines that I always love, to give her her roses now, right? Not waiting until something has happened to give her her roses. And so this is going to be a celebration of the Black woman, information on the Black woman, and we're just going to build and just be happy within that particular day.
Chardon, please.
I would echo everything that my partner, Dr. Harvell, said, my partner, Brother Harvell said, but I would also add that this is building on work that the Black Male and Queens Focus Group has been doing for several years now. For several years, we've held in December, traditionally, the celebration of the Black woman, which took the form of an in-person kind of dinner gala event, but we also had speakers there. It was a time for networking where our students were able to meet with other students from other institutions, other professors and administrators from both Henry Ford and other institutions. Of course, we haven't been able to do as much face-to-face nowadays, but as you mentioned, Susan, that has not dampened our energy. It has not dampened our desire or our ability to be effective. And so by making it a two-day conference, what we've actually done is expand what we were able to do before. And it's going to give people even more of an opportunity to learn about the focus group, but also the topic, which is so vitally important because of all the reasons that Dr. Harbell has already mentioned.
All right. So this this conference, as we mentioned, starts November 11th. So that I'm just pulling up my calendar here so I can double check and make sure that's going to be next Thursday, and obviously on Friday as well. And so it's a 2-day conference. It's going to take place via Zoom. Let's talk about and introduce our keynote speaker for the event, who's not, you know, with us for the interview today, but Dr. Kenja McCray is going to be the keynote speaker. And let's talk a little bit about her and what she is going to bring to the table.
Yes, Dr. McCray, first of all, I just want to say this, is an awesome speaker and a hardcore activist intellectual. And I think what happens a lot of times is that we either are one or the other, right? We're the intellectual, but we don't engage in actually any type of community building, or we're activists, but don't have the intellectual capacity to support our activism. So we start to go into the wrong directions in a sense. Dr. McCray is going to be giving our keynote presentation at noon on November 11th, which is going to be that Thursday. So in the middle of the day on that Thursday. And the keynote address, and I think this, the title speaks for itself, Leadership Lessons takeaways from a historical look at Pan-African nationalist women's activism and advocacy. And so again, this theme of activism is going to be there, and particularly looking at what has happened in terms of the Pan-African perspective or the nationalist perspective. And so we are certainly happy, we are humbled, in fact, to be hosting and welcoming Dr. McCray to our virtual campus in a sense, indeed.
Nice. I know one of the components of bringing a group of people together to celebrate, inform, and educate, really, ultimately, is you kind of don't know what's going to hit which guests. You don't know what people are going to end up walking away from. Sometimes there's a goal coming in, the objective of the conference, and we define what we perceive the objective to be, ultimately, as coordinators, but then after the fact, you find out that it actually goes quite a bit beyond that, depending on who's listening, how they're listening, and, you know, how open their ears are. What do you see as being the objective, just in your words, gentlemen, of getting involved in this conference? And what should minimally you hope people will take away from it?
I think we want, I always want the work of the focus group to shock the consciousness. I want people to, as you mentioned, Susan, you can never be too sure of what will hit a person. But as Dr. Harvell said, we're dismantling preconceived notions. We're dismantling stereotypes. Not only are we talking about the excellence of the Black woman at this conference, but if you look at the description, we plan to have topics that are discussing retention. We plan to have topics that are discussing student success. We plan to have just a variety of topics. And so that way we allow for people to be influenced by whatever they may hear. The theme is excellence of the Black woman, but certainly that umbrella is so large. A lot of times we try to pigeonhole, let's be honest, we try to pigeonhole the Black woman into a certain category, but you can't circumscribe. You can't pin her down. And so I'm hoping and I'm looking forward to getting feedback from people and hearing that there was, oh, I went to this panel discussion, I went to this presentation, and this touched me, or this was something that I learned. We don't want to circumscribe the kind of the effect that it can have. So I'm just hoping that people will come with an open mind, a willingness to learn, a willingness to be touched, to be educated, and kind of go from there.
Thank you. We're joined this afternoon by the coordinators of the Black Male and Queens Focus Group here on the campus of Henry Ford College and our campus community, certainly, as well. And we are very excited to be talking with Chardon Claiborne and Dr. Calvin Harvell as we learn more about this exciting conference, The Excellence of the Black Woman, coming up on Thursday and Friday, November 11th and 12th, next Thursday, next Friday, 9 to 3. It will be a virtual event. It is a free event, so it is open and free and accessible to anyone with the, you know, via Zoom. We've talked about the why, we've talked about the what, we've talked about the when. Can we jump over to the who or whom? You know, if we're celebrating the Black woman, we want the Black woman to be there to be celebrated, certainly, and be a part of that celebration. But I suspect that's not the only, you know, a group of people that you're inviting from our community. Tell us more about that.
Well, Susan, that takes me back to, you know, the last 3 weeks where we've talked about the League of Women Voters, mm-hmm. where obviously men and anybody 16 and up is available to be a member of the League of Women Voters. When we talk Black male and Queens focus group, obviously anybody is welcome into the door and welcome to understand and just engage in this experience and what we're going to be talking about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is there an ideal participant? And I'm sure you're casting a wide net. So Chardon, you want to address that one?
Sure. I've, and you both touched on it. I think it's really important to state very clearly and unequivocally that not only is this event open to anyone who would like to attend, anyone that has, you know, I want to say no malice, no malice in their heart, no ill intention. So is the Black Male and Queens Focus Group. You know, I'm proud to say that our mission is very clear, but I'm proud to say that we have had students, we have had faculty who have participated from all different backgrounds, you know, and we're proud of that, because that shows that the message that we're putting forth and the mission and our goals and our values are being understood for what they are. You know, we're not exclusionary, but we're making sure that we do want to put in the forefront the efforts of Black students, of Black individuals at this campus, and try to help them succeed. And we see in having this conference, again, we want anyone who is for this mission, who is for this progression, who is open to helping us and wants to be a partner with us in learning and growing and in promoting these efforts, we want them to come. So you're right. The title, the theme is the excellence of the Black woman, but I'm hoping that we have, as we have had at many of our conferences, I'm hoping that we have, you know, a kaleidoscope of people, you know, and that's how we grow. That's how we kind of build that coalition, when you have other people who are not necessarily of the same demographic. When you widen that scope, when you widen that perspective, it can only make things propel further. So, Brother Harvey, I'm sure you have other things to say here.
Yes, if I may, I really appreciate, Brother, what you just said. It was certainly a very, very powerful. Just going back to when Mitchie said that we are here to challenge and dismantle narratives. A part of what we're doing, right, when we talk about, you know, who else are we, you know, casting this net for, and I really appreciate that particular language, everybody. The language, the culture of patriarchy, right, is systematically worked to exclude certain groups of people. So if we're challenging these narratives, and I think this is also powerful, if I would just may say this, on the part of Brother Claiborne and I, that we have two men who recognize our own patriarchy and recognize we're operating in a patriarchal culture. And we have put together an entire conference called The Excellence of the Black Woman, which means that he and I are ultimately working to challenge our own patriarchy, which means that we are asking to make sure, and we want to dismantle those narratives of patriarchy overall. I'm making sure I say patriarchy on a number of occasions. I want folks to really hear this thing, okay? And so when we talk about who else are we including, everybody, right? So systems of oppression have excluded folks. The Black Male and Queens Focus Group are working to dismantle all systems of oppression, all systems of dominance, therefore to include everybody. And so as a part of this, although it's called the Excess of the Black Woman Conference, and I want to be honest, I've taken some, you all can't imagine, I've taken some negative questions about, not from this group, but I got some emails that I can't even read this particular language. I had to take off my glasses because I didn't even want to see some of the words of the negative emails that I've gotten about this. But one of the things that I always say, though, we're a liberal arts institution, right? This is a part of our education overall. So I'm a sociologist, but I still took geology courses. I'm a sociologist, but I still took math. I still took English. This should be a part of the overall educational curriculum and extension of what we should be doing every single day. So when we talk about this idea of the essence of the Black woman, you know, and just if I just may go back a little bit further, you know, what do we want people to get out of this thing? I hope that people will come away with challenges and have questions, and that will lead them to more studying. So, for example, we should know as a part of our everyday educational curriculum names such as Septima Clark. We should know who Daisy Bates is. We should know who Ella Baker is. We should know who Nannie Helen Barrows is. If we don't know who these folks are, that means that we are lacking within our education overall. And so a part of the essence of the Black woman is going to be an enhancement of our education as well. Thank you so very much. Again, challenging patriarchy. I got to say that one more time. Two men challenging patriarchy. That's powerful right there. That's how we do it at Henry Ford.
Well, Dr. Havel, I'm just going to tear up my notes. Thank you for not only answering the other question, but asking and answering the next question that I had on my list. So wow. That's yeah, pretty absolutely. Good at that, yeah. Well done. Thank you. Yeah.
I appreciate that. You know, it's funny. I always say when I'm teaching my sociology courses, one of the things that we're supposed to be able to do in sociology is once we study the environment, we're supposed to be able to predict what people are going to do before they do it. So I guess I'm right on. So I already had the prediction of what those questions were, right on. Right. So again, sociology at Henry Ford, that's how we do it too.
Wonderful. Gentlemen, when we talk about all of these, just, you know, it just gives me a chill, you know, thinking about what's going to happen at this conference and the intensity that's going to be there and the passion that's going to be there. When I go back to the Malcolm X quote that Dr. Harvell, you shared about the most disrespected, unprotected, neglected person in, you know, in this nation is the Black woman. I know some people and firsthand that would say the most passionate person in the, you know, is the Black woman, the most capable person, the most hardworking and strong. I mean, I ask any of my young students, my young African American male students, what's going on? How, you know, how come you're succeeding? You're doing so well. My mom, my sister, you know, my sister as in friend sister, you know. So there's, I think, no denying the role that the Black woman plays in this culture, in this local, you know, local discussion, as well as, you know, globally, certainly, but we're talking about our region. So what's stopping that from being more obvious to people that are not getting this? I mean, I see it every day. What's stopping people? What is it? Is it that blinders mentality, just unwilling, or just, I don't know. I'm literally genuinely curious what you think is getting in the way of us seeing the reality of what's out there as it relates to our Black sisters.
The brother is ready to go. So I'm going to
start. Oh, brother. I think what we have to make sure that we're looking at the issue of patriarchy. Again, I know people get frustrated when I bring this up, particularly as a man. You know, I'm going to get thrown out of the man's club, right? I'm not going to know the secret handshake any longer if I keep saying these things. But we do also have to look at how, in many cases, a patriarchy has worked to maintain systems of oppression, even within the same racial group. So one of the things that I even look at, right, we know the civil rights movement would not have been successful if it not had been for the Black woman. At the same time, we know that systematically the presence of the Black woman was removed from the civil rights and movement and replaced by others. So again, we look at the Montgomery bus boycott, right? Of course, the name that we attach to this is Martin Luther King. What many of us don't recognize, that again, these are the lessons that we need to be learning. Again, of the Black woman. This is why Dr. Woodson said Black History Month all year long. The Montgomery Improvement Association was led by Black women. And it was the Montgomery Improvement Association that was first the organizers of what happened that eventually became the Montgomery bus boycott. The only man that was involved in that at that particular time, for the most part, was a gentleman by the name of E.D. Nixon. OK. And it wasn't until later that you got some of the people that they define now the superstars of the civil rights movement. And so what you find is that there is an unholy relationship in many cases between patriarchy and racism. And so we see the women of each race is always looked at as being the inferior, right on. So you can have a racial oppression, but the woman of the race is still looked at as being, you know, worse than the man of that particular race. And so it's powerful that you made that statement earlier. One of the things that I always say at every conference, and I'm sure I'm going to say it at this particular conference when I'm paying homage, is I always say it is the unseen labor of the Black woman that allows Black men to go into spaces and be seen as if they're more important than what they actually are. And so at that time, I always give a shout out to my own wife and to my daughter. Oftentimes, I get a lot of props for what, you know, Dr. Harvell has been able to do. But again, there's some folks that are here in this household who open the doors, who make sure that Dr. Harvell is going to be able to go out and do all these great things that I do. I do some great stuff, but I do recognize it is it's my wife, Ashley. It's my daughter. It is my mother, in fact, who willed my greatness into existence. And so, again, when we look at the narratives of the popular culture, whether it be in the mass media, the narratives of the church. We look at the narratives that we learn in education, right? So those names that I just mentioned, Septima Clark, Nellie Helen Barrows, these are not a part of the regular curriculum. And so once again, let's be honest, throughout our history courses, the way that you become a great woman has been what? To be married to a great man, right on? And so somehow women can't be great on their own, right? Or they gave birth to a great man. That sexism needs to be challenged, needs to be dismantled. And we're going to do that November 11th and November 12th at the Exodus of the Black Woman Conference. And in fact, the Black Male and Queens Focus Group does that every single day, 365 days a year at Henry Ford College. That's how we do it.
Well, I was going to get to that. And again, you're answering my questions before I actually ask them, which is great. Ms. Parks, certainly enters in that equation, but let's talk about Dr. McCray and what specifically she's going to bring to this, when we get to next Thursday and next Friday, and, you know, how she's uniquely qualified to be part of this presentation and what you expect both, the Black males and queens and the broader audience. Mm-hmm. To get out of her presentation.
Brother, you want to take it? I feel like I'm taking up all the time, brother.
Oh, no, all is well. I'm honestly, and the brother will back me up here, this was my first time learning of Dr. McCray. So I'm just as excited as I hope our listeners will be and just as enticed to hear what she's going to talk about. I know that, as Dr. Harvell mentioned, she's not only an academic, she's very well versed in that, but she's also an activist. So I'm hoping that by melding those two and by being able to come and speak to us, speak to our students, speak to all who are in attendance, we'll be able to see that you don't have to choose one lane. And that's one of the things also that we're trying to challenge. One of the things that we talk about in the focus group a lot is there doesn't have to be one particular road that you have to go down as a student. A lot of times our students get very pigeonholed and think it's just the classroom. It's just the classroom. But we challenge them to go beyond that. We challenge them to participate in conferences, to write articles, to publish and present. But also we challenge them and we go out into the community. We're a service-based organization. The Black Male and Queens Focus Group isn't just one thing. And so I'm hoping that by having another example of this phenomenal Black woman who's coming, who wears multiple hats, is going to be able to speak to these multiple topics and issues, that our students will have yet another example, one that's not a male or a man, as Dr. Harvell and I are, to see another example, and one that's not just at Henry Ford. So we're moving again beyond boundaries. So beyond our campus, beyond the gender that they're seeing with them on a regular basis, and into a different space. Dr. Harvell.
If I may, I was just going to say, along with what Brother Claiborne said, I think it's also powerful. Dr. McCray is both a historian and a sociologist. That's powerful in and of itself, okay? So I'm a historian, I understand how these things happen. I'm a sociologist, I understand why these things happen. I'm a sociologist, I also understand why they're gonna continue to essentially happen. And so she's gonna be looking at, again, Pan-Africanism. So again, this whole notion of not just looking at the struggles of Black peoples here in the so-called United States, but globally, right on, and looking at the ways in which people have navigated these challenges, navigated these struggles. That's powerful in and of itself. We don't do enough of that in the academy overall, that's first. The other thing, when you ask the question about the focus group, what are we expecting? I want to say this, and as Brother Claiborne said, our students present. We have some students that are going to be presenting at this particular conference, right on, and that's going to be extremely powerful. I'm just going to go ahead and give her a shout out right now. Alana Schwartz is a superstar at Henry Ford College, and she is doing some magnificent things. If you go to the Black Male and Queens Focus Group website, you can see an entire art show that she put together for Black History Month, okay? She's going to be doing another magnificent art show for this particular conference. One of our previous students, and we keep in contact with all of our students, is coming back. She's currently at the University of Michigan, Ann Arbor, Kiera Scott. And again, I can say this because they're going to be in the program anyway, so I'm not speaking, you know, of folk who we don't know, but she's one of our previous students, superstar. She's coming back to do a presentation. And I also want to just mention about Dr. McCray, and in fact, about all of our speakers that come to any of our events, whether it be the Black Member Retention and Success Conference that happens in April, the Queen's Dinner where we have the speakers. These speakers become a part of the focus group. These are folks who actually are passionate about the work that the focus group is essentially doing. And so what happens is that this now, as Brother Claiborne says, connects our students with a extended network of scholars from around the country now. And so what happens is that when they meet Dr. McCray next week, they will be able to contact Dr. McCray later on for letters of recommendation, getting into schools, scholarships, et cetera, et cetera. And we keep these relationships going on with all of the people that come to speak with the focus group. Because the focus group is, we're just not, whenever we have speakers, and I know Brother Claiborne knows how I feel about this. You all know how some conferences are, right? Some conferences, they cost $1,337 to essentially attend, right on. And the speaker comes and talks for 10 minutes. And again, I'm trying to figure out what you said in 10 minutes. It cost me $1 million, $1 million. But you all have seen this. The speaker comes in at 12. They talk from 12:05 to 12:45. Then they're whisked off into the limousine to go back to the airport to go and collect the King's ransom again. One of the things about the focus group speakers, ready, this is going to sound so strange in capitalism, they actually care about the work that they're doing. Uh-oh, I know I didn't say that out loud. They actually care about the work they're doing, and they care about student success. And so our speakers always, they come early. Sometimes they stay afterwards. But even when they are going back into whatever state they're at, the students still have access to them. Ready? Not just later on that week. They have access to them years later. All they have to do is call them and say, I'm a member of the Black Male and Queens Focus Group. And all of a sudden, as one of our students said when we went to visit a college, he said that people were treating us nice at this college. He said, but when they found out we were members of the Focus Group, they rolled out the red carpet for us. That's what the Black Male and Queens Focus Group is always going to essentially do, building for eternity.
Now, you both have mentioned twice the issue of activism being essential and a part of this group, that it's not just a classroom or an academic or a social club or any of that. What is it, you know, as gentlemen who have been involved in this for a number of years, that you see in our students today who maybe at 18 or 19 or 20 years old are experiencing it for the first time, especially, you know, in light of all of the, I would hopefully say, and I hope not to be too generous, social progress that we've made, certainly and hopefully the last three or four or eight or 10 or however many years, however you define that.
I think our students are very savvy, and our students today are very, I'm trying to get at your question. I think our students are very aware of what's going on in the world today, what's going on in their communities. In a lot of ways, the college is just a microcosm and a reflection of what's going on in the greater society. I know at one of our first meetings, our students, we talked about what's going on with them and their lives and academics. But one of the first things that they went to is, well, how can we go into some of the schools and help other students that are in K-12 and mentor them and help them? Well, how can we do some things that address the disparities in food? How can we know we have the Hawk's Nest on campus, but what can we do to extend that support in some ways? What can we do to, they were very ambitious. What can we do? How can we form a nonprofit organization and do things in the community? So our students understand very acutely what's going on in the world, what's going on in their societies, what's going on in their backyards. And they're not content that just because that they're in college and life may be going relatively well for themselves, they know that there's disparities. They know that there are others who need help, and they want to be a part of the solution. They're not content to sit back and let others solve the problems. They know that they have the ability and the wherewithal to change the world themselves. And I mean, how can it's, I love being able to say that because we already have, you know, preconceptions about who comes to community college, how far can these people go? Again, it's about that dismantling. Our students are powerful. Our students are intelligent. Our students are passionate. And so they know what's going on in the world, and they're going to make the every effort to change that world. And we put a lot on the generations who are coming behind us. We put a lot on their shoulders and say, oh, you're going to have to fix things. We don't have to put anything on them because they already want to do it. They're challenging us. They want us. They're propelling us. And that's one of the things that we always encourage. And we tell our students at every meeting, the focus group is your group. The focus group is going to run as well as you want it to run. Whatever you have on your agenda, whatever it is that you want us to accomplish, that's what we're going to do. And this group, as Dr. Harbelman, is still one of his words, he always says, it's a monster. This group. And what we mean by that, just the capacity for growth, the capacity for change, the willingness to just do whatever they can. These students have it to a monstrous degree. It's just that big and that impressive. And sometimes that's scary, but it lets us know we have to be on point and we have to match the energy that they're bringing to the group.
Always, always admired and respected the way the organization, the focus group is put together. I just love that it's called a focus group, first and foremost. It's just so rare that you hear that, you know, you try to call things, you kind of compartmentalize them, but focus group is just most appropriate, and you described why in your statements just there. So this is not a club. This is not that kind of a thing. It goes beyond that, and we've been witness to it, those of us that have been on the campus for a long time. Chardon, I know you'll agree, but what you two are coordinating is obviously very powerful, very special, but most importantly very unique. I would like to think that it would be a template or a model for other organizations, for other people that have passion about wanting to share information and help students, most importantly, help students succeed, which is what this is about. So we can only hope that these wonderful examples are contagious to others. Mm-hmm. But we know that this is going to be an amazing conference, and not just because it's being brought to us by the Black Male and Queens Focus Group, but because of you two and your commitment and passion to what you do on a regular basis, not just in this you know focus group, but certainly, in a whole organic and holistic way. We're going to wrap. We want to just get into the very specifics one more time about how people can register for this conference, and then also more about the focus group itself. Who'd like to share that?
Definitely. The conference, again, is November 11th and November 12th. It's a two-day conference. Both days running from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. It is going to be virtual. So we will be on Zoom, as we've all become very accustomed. We have a registration link on the HFC website. We'll search for the Excellence of the Black Woman Conference. It will come up. We'll get a nice nice article about the conference and also a registration link. For anyone who registers prior to the conference, you will receive an email that has the Zoom link. We're trying to be very careful about that sort of thing because we know about, you know, how there can be some bad actors with Zoom. So we want to get that information out after people have registered. The Black Male and Queens Focus Group meets every Wednesday on Zoom from noon to 2 p.m. It is open to all students. It's open to anyone in the HFC community that would like to attend and want to be a part of what we're doing. We do have a focus. It is an academic and social support network and advisory network for our students. So we want to make sure that that word is out there and that students know that we are there to support them. Am I missing anything, Dr. Harville?
Brother, I think you, that was perfect, brother. That was perfect. I'm talking about perfection. Right on, brother, right on.
The Excellence of the Black Women Conference takes place next Thursday, November 11th and Friday, November 12th, 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. Keynote speaker, Dr. Kenja McCray, will be the event's keynote speaker. For more information about the event, you can go to hfcc.edu and scroll through the news section there, and you should find a link somewhere there. For more information about the Black Male and Queens Focus Group, you can visit hfcc.edu/BMQFG. This is the WHFR Journal. I'm Alan Mazurek along with Susan McGraw. Thanks so much for being with us this Friday afternoon. We'll be back with more here on WHFR Making Waves.
Henry Ford College in Dearborn is hosting virtual mini job fairs for those interested in a career in business or the health service industries. Every mini job fair will be conducted via Zoom, and information about the events on November 3rd and November 11th can be found by going to the Announcements tab at careers.hfcc.edu. That's careers.hfcc.edu. The Arab American National Museum proudly hosts its annual Arab Film Festival, November 1st through 7th. The festival features fascinating new titles from one of the most prolific and creative set of filmmakers on the planet. Arab Film Festival is one of the museum's longest-running programs, dating back to its inception in 2005. It's your chance to see Arab and Arab American films for fans of Arabic language movies and adventurous art film lovers seeking new perspectives and outside-the-box thinking. Many of these are films by both Arab world and Arab American artists, unlikely to reach traditional American commercial theaters. Genres include drama, comedy, and documentary in both short form and feature length films. Every festival film is subtitled in English, making them accessible to all. This year's Arab Film Festival will be taking place both online and in person from November 1st through November 7th. More information can be found at aanmfilmfest.eventive.org.
Welcome back. This is the WHFR Journal. My name's Alan Mazurek. Thanks for being with us this Friday afternoon here on WHFR. I'll be here until 2 o'clock, and in fact, at that time, we'll have Kitty Love taking us on a trip down Highway 61. We do hope you will stay tuned. Right now, we want to take a moment after that last segment and go over some election results from earlier this week here in the cities of Dearborn and Dearborn Heights. Of course, we had our great pleasure over the last few weeks to give you the opportunity to meet the candidates for mayor and city council in both cities, as well as the candidates for the Dearborn Charter Commission. Election day was this past Tuesday, November 2nd, and in the city of Dearborn, Abdullah Hamoud is the new mayor of the city of Dearborn with 13,040 votes, as he beat Gary Warinchek, who was the other candidate running for that office. On the city council for this coming term, we will have Michael Cerini, Leslie Herrick, Mustafa Hamoud, Ken Paris, Aaron Burns, Kamal Al-Sawafi, and Robert A. Abraham, the seven candidates who were elected to the Dearborn City Council. Charter Commission will be made up of Hassan Abdallah, Elizabeth Bailey, Laura Dudgeon, Sharon Dolmage, Hussein Hakim, Timothy Harrison, Cheryl Hawkins, and L. Glenn O'Cray. That will be for the Charter Commission for the City of Dearborn. George Duraney is the city clerk. Proposal 1 in Dearborn did not pass. That failed by 10,495 no votes to 9,772 yes votes. Election totals down in both cities, at least according to the city clerks and past elections and what they were expecting for turnout. In Dearborn Heights, the mayor for the partial term, which will end at the end of this year, is going to be Bill Bazzi, who defeated Denise Malinowski Maxwell, and indeed after December 31st, so on July 1st or January 1st, 2022, Bill Bazzi will continue as the mayor of Dearborn Heights. The city council for the next 4 years will be made up of Hassan Ahmad, Nancy Breyer, Bob Constance and Tom Wenzel, and the partial term election for the city council. This is going to be a partial term which will end at the end of 2023, so a two-year term. Mo Baydoun won that election over Ned Pigian. So more information, obviously, on election results available from local newspapers, including the Press and Guide, also League of Women Voters, Dearborn Heights, who were our very, very kind friends the past few weeks, as you had the chance to meet the candidates here on the WHFR Journal. As mentioned, I'm Alan Mazurek. We'll be with you until the top of the hour. I do hope you'll stay with us. We're going to turn next to a TED Talk, and a very timely one indeed. Earlier this week, this past Sunday, the 2021 United Nations Climate Change Conference opened in Glasgow, Scotland. It was delayed a year because of the COVID pandemic, but it features representatives from governments all around the world committing to an enhanced ambition towards mitigating climate change. And of course, leaders around the world includes our own President Joe Biden, who was at the conference in Glasgow. The conference itself continues all the way until the 12th of November. So a week from today is when the United Nations Climate Change Conference, COP26, will wrap up in Glasgow. And with that going on, we thought we'd take the opportunity to have a TED Talk talking about climate change and climate action. And in this case, a TED Talk entitled How to Make Radical Climate Action the New Normal. It comes from TED's Countdown Summit, which took place and actually was been published. This particular TED Talk published just a few days ago. The Countdown Summit took place in the month of October. And the speaker on this one, Nobel laureate and former United States Vice President Al Gore. He says a net zero future is possible, but first we need to flip a mental switch to truly understand that we can stop the climate crisis if we try. In this inspiring and essential talk, Gore shares examples of extreme climate events, identifies the man-made systems holding us back from progress, and invites us all to join the movement for climate justice. Let's listen to it now from the TED Countdown Summit, which took place in October. Al Gore speaking on how to make radical climate action the new normal here on the WHFR Journal.
So the climate crisis, in my way of thinking about it, is the most serious manifestation of an underlying collision between human civilization as we've presently organized it and the Earth's ecological systems. And the system most in jeopardy is the very thin shell of atmosphere surrounding our planet, because we're spewing 162 million tons of human-caused global warming pollution into it every single day, as if this is an open sewer. It's not an open sewer. It's so thin that if you could drive an automobile at Autobahn speeds to the top of that blue shell, you'd reach it in about 5 minutes. And that's where all the greenhouse gases are. The accumulated amount coming from the burning of fossil fuels, primarily CO2, fastest growing source of methane is from fossil fuels as well, also agriculture, as you have heard. The accumulated amount traps as much heat now as would be released by 600,000 Hiroshima-class atomic bombs exploding every day. So the temperatures are going up at almost record levels every year. Last year was the hottest year in recorded history, according to NASA, and the scientists say it's absolutely unequivocal that we are the cause of that. And we're hearing Mother Nature and seeing the extreme events. The most anomalous extreme event since records began 200 years ago was in the Pacific Northwest of North America, 49.5 degrees, 121 degrees Fahrenheit in British Columbia. In the tropics and subtropics, the combination of temperature and humidity is now making larger areas literally uninhabitable. The area so described is relatively small now, but if we continue over the next few decades, these areas are predicted to expand. And billions of people will be in areas where it is not safe to stay outside for more than a couple of hours. Already the climate refugees and migrants are four times more from the climate crisis than from all the wars and conflicts going on right now. And the respected Lancet Commission has predicted as many as a billion climate refugees in this century. That's one of the reasons why we are seeing this wave of populist authoritarianism. Sea level rise is also contributing. And of course, 93% of the extra heat is absorbed in the oceans, and the ocean temperatures are reaching record levels as well. And that means more water vapor comes off the oceans, and the warmer ocean temperature makes the cyclonic storms like hurricanes and typhoons much stronger. Hurricane Ida struck the Gulf Coast as a Category 4, and as is so often the case, communities of color and poor people were disproportionately victimized. This storm continued on north and northeast across North America to New York, New Jersey, and Pennsylvania, killed a lot of people and dropped rain bombs. And in New York City, some basement apartments were flooded. And I appreciate this family giving me the right to show this video. He's safe. The guy is screaming for his mother. He and his mother were both rescued by his brother, who punched a hole through the roof from the floor above. These rain bombs are becoming much more frequent and much more extreme. And actually, the water coming off the oceans is held in much greater volumes by the warmer air. Atmospheric rivers are becoming larger. Here's one from Hawaii in the lower left to Silicon Valley in the upper right, 2,300 kilometers. What was happening in Silicon Valley when this satellite picture was made? Well, that's what happens when these rain bombs drop. And the average atmospheric river now contains as much moisture as 25 Mississippi rivers. They're creating what you could call atmospheric tsunamis in some areas. The downpours get much bigger and much more frequent, four times more frequent now than in 1980. One of them dropped on Germany and neighboring countries in July, killed more than 200 people. Look at the before and after. This is an example of what we're doing to our planet. 10 days ago in part of Italy, there were 74 centimeters that fell in 12 hours, 29 inches of rain in 12 hours. 1 year ago, October 3rd, as much rain fell here in the UK as there is water in Loch Ness. And as a result, the insurance industry is now seeing record recoveries. And those recoveries I showed you from last year may get a tiny bit larger, depending on the outcome of this lawsuit. The owners and operators of this giant replica of Noah's Ark have sued their insurance company for $1 million in flood damages. Hard to make some of this stuff up. The same extra heat is pulling the moisture out of the first meter of the soil, creating the worst droughts in memory. 93% of the American West is in drought now. 100% of California, half of California is in the most extreme form of drought. And the same heat is also draining the reservoirs, evaporating the reservoirs. Lake Mead is down to levels not seen since they started filling it in the 1930s. In Brazil, the same thing is happening. In Eastern Europe, the Czech Republic has been going through the worst drought in at least 500 years. And in the southern cone of Africa, 100 million people are experiencing food insecurity primarily because of the extended droughts. And when the temperatures go up, the fires get a lot worse. And the worst fires in California and Western U.S. history have been in the last 2 years. Also in Siberia, in Australia, in Southern Europe. Doesn't have to ruin your golf game. And this is a serious point because we can't let these conditions become the new normal. It's not fine. And this is an example of why it's not fine. A lightning strike hitting a natural gas leak in the middle of the Gulf of Mexico. Lightning gets more common with the climate crisis. We're relying on dead plants and animals leaving their residue in the atmosphere to threaten the species that are still alive. And 50% of them are in danger of extinction in this century. And as we push into previously wild areas of the world, we encounter millions of new viruses that we have not dealt with in the past. Five new infectious diseases every year emerging, three quarters of them from animals, like the COVID-19 pandemic. which raises some of the same questions that are raised by the climate crisis. When the world's leading scientists are setting their hair on fire to get our attention, should we listen to them? Check. Can our interconnected global civilization suddenly be turned upside down? Check. Are the poor and marginalized populations of the world the most affected? Check. Can science and technology give us nearly miraculous solutions in record time? Check. Will we deploy those solutions in time? That is the question. We have inequitable vaccine distribution in the world, and it threatens everyone in the world. We also have solutions to the climate crisis, but they're not equitably distributed. Worldwide, 90% of all of the new electricity generation installed last year was renewables, almost all of it from solar and wind. Just 1 year before the Paris Agreement, solar and wind electricity was cheaper than fossil electricity in only 1% of the world. 5 years later, 2/3 of the world. 3 years from now, it will be the cheapest source in 100% of the world. Coal is not getting cheaper. Gas is not getting cheaper. Nuclear's been getting more expensive. Wind is cheaper than all three. And solar is continuing to plummet in cost and is the cheapest of all now because the cost of making the solar panels and the windmills continues to come down. By the way, the famous Coal Museum in Kentucky just installed solar panels on its roof in order to save in its operating budget. Now we're getting battery storage. I'll rescale this graph to show you the predicted emergence of a new $1 trillion industry in the next few decades, and green hydrogen on top of that. The car batteries are getting cheaper as demand continues to increase. And within less than 2 years, in some model categories, the EVs will be cheaper than their internal combustion engine counterparts, and within 4 years in all model categories. So the oil and gas industry has been the worst investment in global markets for more than a decade, while the clean energy companies are really becoming more profitable. Now, the oil and gas companies say that they're going to invest a lot more in renewables and CCS. Yes, it's the fastest growing. They've tripled their investments all the way up to 4%. 96% of the money they're spending is still going into oil and gas and coal. The impression they've given us is not an honest impression, not for the first time. And they're telling a different story to Wall Street. They still have planes, trains, a few automobiles and ships, but they're telling Wall Street and financial markets they're going to make it up in plastics, which is 75% of their third largest market, petrochemicals. How's that working out for us? Not so well. Banning single-use plastics is one of the many things that we have to do. We have to shift to sustainability. And here's the good news. The sustainability revolution is the single biggest business opportunity in the history of the world. It has the scale of the industrial revolution coupled with the speed of the digital revolution. And what we're seeing is that we have to seize this opportunity, but we need reforms in the current version of capitalism. Capitalism does a lot of things great. It balances supply and demand and allocates resources efficiently and often unlocks a higher fraction of the human potential. And by the way, the alternatives on the left and right explored in the 20th century didn't work out very well. But in order to see how we need to change capitalism, we have to pull out our focus. And let me present an analogy. The electromagnetic spectrum, from the long radio waves to the short gamma rays and all the things in between, the portion of visible light that we can see with our eyes makes up only 0.1% of the total. For the 8 years I worked in the White House, I got a daily report from the intelligence community that collected from all parts of the spectrum, and it was a much more accurate picture. Here's the analogy. The value spectrum is something we too frequently look at through the very narrow aperture of short-term profits for one stakeholder, the shareholders. But this leaves out negative externalities, as the economists call them, like the pollution. That's why we need a price on carbon and a price on plastic pollution. It also leaves out positive externalities. So we're chronically underinvesting in education and healthcare and environmental protection, pandemic preparedness. We're ignoring the depletion of resources like topsoil and underground water aquifers. And we're ignoring the distribution of incomes and net worths to the point where 1% of the people have almost half of the world's wealth. That's one of the other factors that's driving populist authoritarianism. We have to take account of the environmental effects and the effects on people and their families and the communities where they live and the communities in their supply chain and the ethics in the C-suites. And we have to realize that hyper inequality is a threat to both capitalism and to democracy. There is an emergent form called multi-stakeholder capitalism, and it is driving a lot of new decisions. For example, in asset management, almost half of all the assets in the world under management are now in portfolios committed to net zero. One reason is that the Paris Agreement set the direction of travel where every country in the world committed to net zero. So, just last May, the G7 nations banned financing of coal plants overseas, and just 3 weeks ago, China did, which is good because they were financing most of them, and I hope that they will cut down on the coal chain in China domestically as well. And now more than half of all the greenhouse gas emissions and two-thirds of global GDP is coming from countries that have set net zero targets. So here's the hope. Once we reach net zero, then with a lag time of as little as 3 to 5 years, the temperatures in the world will stop going up. And once we reach net zero, within as little as 25 to 30 years, half of the human-caused CO2 will fall out of the atmosphere. It is as if we have a switch that we can flip in order to stop the climate crisis. Regrettably, some damage has been done, but we can stop the temperatures from going up and start the healing process. But we all have to flip this switch known as reaching net zero. The young people are telling us that we have to, and they're marching in every country in the world. And what's the response? As recently as this morning, we heard, well, it may be impossible. Well, it's not impossible. Nelson Mandela said, it always seems impossible until it's done. That's what they told the abolitionists. It's impossible to eliminate slavery. That's what they told the women's suffragettes. It's impossible to have equal rights for women. In the civil rights movement in my country and the anti-apartheid movement in South Africa, and more recently, the lesbian and gay liberation and equal rights movement. We can do this. This is the biggest emergent social movement in all of history. We can do this. And if anybody thinks that we don't have the political will, remember, political will is itself a renewable resource. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Nobel laureate and former United States Vice President Al Gore and his TED Talk, How to Make Radical Climate Action the New Normal. Wrapping up today's edition of the WHFR Journal, I'm Alan Mazurek. Thanks so much for being with us this Friday afternoon. Susan McGraw and I hope to see you back here next Friday from 1 until 2 here on the station Making Waves. Kitty Love is up next, taking us on a trip down Highway 61 from the campus of Henry Ford College. This is WHFR Dearborn.